Welcome to the Fully Express Podcast.
We're your hosts, Karenna and Samantha.
This show is your permission slip to stop holding back. Here, we talk about what it really means to live unapologetically you in your relationships, your business, and your everyday life.
We believe the most magnetic version of you is rooted in self-expression, honesty, vulnerability, and showing up fully as you are. When you own that, you naturally attract the people, the opportunities, and the life that is meant for you.
Hey guys, on today's episode, we are talking to Alexis Ottenrick, who is not only a holistic chef, but what Corinne and I would both describe as a fully embodied, fully expressed woman.
In this conversation, she dives so deeply into her journey of just going after what she really wants. She truly embodies this energy of not caring what people think. In such a balanced way as well. She lets us into real life stories that you're going to actually see yourself in. And I promise you, you're going to feel so inspired to live your life more unapologetic, more you, and stand by what you really believe your truth is.
Alexis is a holistic chef and wellness educator passionate about using food as medicine. Growing up in an Italian family and spending time in Italy, she learned that cooking is an act of love. And that philosophy truly is seen in everything she creates.
Truly. So good, you guys. From entrepreneurship to motherhood to growing up to raising kids, one with autism, and so much more. I can't wait for you to listen.
Enjoy. Welcome, Alexis. We're Hi. So excited to have you on the podcast today.
I'm so happy to be here.
So I thought of you for multiple reasons. I mean, you have a myriad of talents, but one of the things I love most about you is like when I think about someone who's authentic and fully expressed, like you absolutely come to mind. You are just very much in your truth and yourself and all the stories you've shared, which hopefully we'll share some of them today, have just really shown that like you beat to your own drum. And you follow your own inner guidance, and it's led you to some really amazing places. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, I was like, you have to come on and talk about, you're like the antithesis of fully, not antithesis.
Ethos of fully expressed.
I'm like, not
I was like, maybe that's the word.
I hope ethos.
No, you're the, antithesis of suppressed. Oh, yeah. That. You're fully expressed.
Thank you. Yeah. Thank you for having me. I'm very happy to be here. It's my first podcast, so...
Yay.
We'll Which is wild roll. To We're me because you've been an entrepreneur for such a long time.
Yeah. I don't know. It's all coming out here.
That's right.
Wow. We get to have you for the first time.
I'm honored to be here.
Yeah. So
sweet. Popping your podcast cherry.
Yeah. All right. Let's go.
Oh my God. It's amazing.
Well, I feel like Sam was saying something like ever since you were young, you've always like listened to your own instincts.
Yes. I think I was just gifted with always kind of knowing that I had a North Star, which was doing things my own way. And one of my earliest memories of that is when I was probably like 7 or 8. And I remember I really wanted to do Pop Warner Cheer. And I had like missed the deadline to go try out. And I told my mom, I'm like, I really want to do this cheer thing. And she was like, well, you missed the deadline. I don't know what to tell you. And I was like, give me the lady's number. And a caller. So at like 7 or 8 years old, I called the lady and was like, my name's Alexis. I really want to do cheer. I'm a dancer. And can I, like, I know you've already had the tryouts, but can I come try out? Somehow, some way, she ended up arranging it and I ended up doing cheer. But that was like kind of the first time I felt empowered to really speak for myself. And it was like, I knew that if I wanted something in life, even at a very young age, it was attainable, but I had to go after it. And my parents were very hands-off with me as a child. You know, they kind of let my brother and I really decide what we did, what we didn't do. They never really pressured us to play sports or play an instrument. It was really kind of self-guided. It was also the 80s, so very hands-off parenting then, you know, where parents just kind of let you...
Come back by dark.
Exactly. You know, you just got to do your own thing. So, that was kind of one of my first experiences where I was like, like, if I'm told no or I can't do something, I can actually, like, if I really want to do something, anything's possible. I just have to believe in myself and I have to, like, you know, be pleasantly persistent about things. And, yeah, it works out. So that was kind of one of my first memories of... really going for something that I wanted. And then that kind of set the course for the rest of my childhood and my adulthood where I just always had a vision of something I wanted. And, you know, many times it happened. So
how did that feel like? It's like I'm thinking about some people that are like don't have that same like confidence or like desire for that vision.
Yeah.
Like I feel like people will think about the vision, they're like, oh, but like, how am I going to get there? Or like, what if this happens? Or like, what if they say no? Like, they made it about themselves. Like, I'm so curious about your process.
Well, I think a lot of that stems from fear, right? Mm-hmm. So for me, I've always had very little fear. And it's like, I'm okay with rejection. You know, mm-hmm. I think, and I'm okay with failure. So if I've failed at something in life, which obviously I'm a human, I've failed at many things. I don't let it like destroy my character or destroy my confidence. It's kind of like, to me, it pushes me actually to do something that I want even further, where it's like, okay, I failed at this. Like, I don't want to do that. I don't like this feeling. I don't like not being told no. So, you know, it pushes me to actually move forward. And especially when like parents or teachers or whatever, if they'd ever be like, no, you can't do that, I'd be like, oh, just watch me, I will do it. And a lot of times I did. And I think just having an inner guidance that I trusted, which was my own intuition. I think a lot of times people question their own intuition. And I've just never questioned that. It's like, if I've ever envisioned something or wanted something, it's like I said many times, it's happened because I believe in myself and I know what I'm capable of. And it's, as a human, we're capable of anything, you know, and I've always really believed that. I try to teach my kids that like anything you want in this life is possible. You have to believe in yourself and you just have to try. You know, and you're going to fail. It's inevitable. You will fail at certain things, but you can fail forward, right? Where you learn from those lessons and it makes you, it gives you the guidance and the tools to actually move forward in a better way. So, yeah.
So what was like one of the first times you remember failing? Because I think so often, one, parents, especially now, tend to try to stop their kids from experiencing failure.
Right.
But like, what is an example of like when you failed and how did you, like, I know it sounds like it's instinctual for you to just be like, well, I'll just try again.
Right.
But what did that feel like? Because a lot of times I think when people fail, that's when they stop. And they're just that, then they have this kind of like shame around it, or they have this insecurity and then they don't want to try again. So what did it feel like? What was that for you?
So I think, again, just thinking of my childhood and like going into teenage years, which I have teenage boys, you know, it's a rough time in your life because it's like you're changing and you're figuring out who you are. My parents got divorced when I was 10, and that was like a huge shift in my life, right? That was a time where it was like everything that I thought I had and that was important to me was taken away. And it really made me go internal, right? Where I had to be like, you know, what actually matters? You know, do all the things and the stuff and the lifestyle, does that matter? Is it like my character and who I am as a person? So I think that that gave me a place to actually, you know, it was a struggle. It was very hard emotionally, but it also was like, again, you could do anything in this lifetime. And I was a professional dancer when I was a kid. I was on like a professional dance team. And when I went into high school, there was an institute that was for professional arts students. So it was called OSHA. And I remember I went and tried out for it. And it was me and one of my very good dancer friends from my studio. And she got in and I didn't get in. And that was like the first time where it was like, and there was no getting around it. I was told no, I wasn't getting into this high school. It was like, yeah, you can't come try out again. Like you're done.
Oh, interesting.
And so I was like, okay. This was one of the first times where I'm like, there was nothing I could do. And I really had my heart set on going to this school. I really wanted to pursue my dancing career. I was very like passionate about dancing at that age. And then we had some family friends that went to an all-girl Catholic school and they were very big in sports and I could be on the dance team there. So we shifted to that. And it's interesting because at the time, obviously, when you're going through something, especially when you're a teenager, a kid, like you don't understand the reasons why. But then as an adult, you can say, okay, well, this totally made sense because I ended up going to this other high school. And there I have like three of my best friends that are still like sisters to me today. I met at that high school. And it ended up being an amazing experience for me. So I think just shifting and knowing that like, okay, just because you're told no, or you think, right? So many times in life, we think we want this thing, you know, and that's not what's meant for us.
Yeah.
You know, and just being okay with like, this is not meant for me when I need to shift, and like, then another direction or path will open and it ends up being so much better. Right. And I think that's just all of life where we're always just like, maybe we have our heart set on this certain idea or business, or for me as a parent, you know, like I had all these preconceived notions before I became a mom of like how I wanted to parent and how I wanted my children to be. And then when I became a mom, you know, and I did all these things to prevent certain things, like, you know, my son who's 15 now, he has autism. It's like I did so many things before I was pregnant and when I got pregnant to prevent that, and then he still has it. And it's like now I see what a gift that is, not just for me as a parent, but for my entire family and for the world. Like, you know, he has a special talent, but it's like, you know, sometimes we just focus on these things that we have our heart set on and we really believe, like, I'm doing this thing for this reason. And, you know, I always say we make plans and God laughs. And, you know, it's like you have to find the humor and the beauty in life, and that, like, things are not always going to work out how you want them to or you anticipate them to. But a lot of times it's for a greater good or a greater lesson or to bring you some, like, joy that you would never experienced otherwise.
What I love so much about what you're saying, to, like, reflect it back, like, in your energy, it seems like you take initiative, though. You take action. Mm-hmm. You, like, go towards the thing that you want. But then you're also, like, kind of trusting that, like, at the end of the day, if I don't get the thing, it's leading me somewhere else.
Totally.
And it's so difficult to do that for some people. They're like, yeah. Either you're someone that's like, I'm 100% committed and I'm going to go extreme and I'm going to go get the thing and I'm going to figure it out and I'm going to keep pushing. Like, some people will hit their head against the wall and literally be like, why isn't this not working?
Yeah.
Versus realizing that, like, oh, maybe this is not meant for me. And
right.
This is where I love to talk about, like, God, too, in the sense of, like, I feel like there's, like, this universal GPS that we're all living in. He's, like, he's just rerouting you 100%. To, like, your destination. And, like, even though you don't know, you thought you were going to go left, it was actually supposed to be a right, and you ended up getting to the right.
Yeah.
But you had to go down a couple lefts in order to get to the right.
It's true.
You know?
Yeah, I think just ultimately, for me, I've always tried my best. And like I said, I have these visions and things I want in my life. And I feel like many times God is like, I'm going to give it to you if this is something you really want. And sometimes it's like that door closes. And to me, that's always how I've navigated. And I'm like, if the door is opening, I'm going to walk through it. Mm-hmm. If the door is shutting, like, that's a sign, a very clear sign to me that it's not meant to be. Yeah. And just reshifting. It's like, okay, that door closed, like, next door. You know, there's always doors that are going to be opening and closing in your life.
Yeah.
And just being able to, like, navigate, okay, like, that door closed for whatever reason. And again, when you take a step back, you can see why. A lot of times you have a, you know,
just, like, a moment.
The bird's eye view.
Exactly. Yeah. You have a bird's eye view of, like, why certain things happened in your life the way that they did. Mm. And again, just making the best of it, you know, like, we can always try to plan things, but it's not always going to work out how we want them to. But many times it can work out even better if we allow it to, you know, and if we trust. Like, I trust that there's a divine plan, not just for my life, but for every life, you know?
Yeah.
And I'm always trying to tap into that guidance, which is really your intuition, right? And just being in touch with your intuition.
So good. I'm like, keep talking.
I know.
One thing I want to ask is, like, ask about how you've, like, how this has supported you in your business, like, having this mindset of, like, going for what you need and being guided and going for after what you want, but then also, like, trusting at the same time.
Because I can speak to you, you're very good at sales. Like, you are so good.
Well, I was blessed that, so I've always been, like, my dad is an entrepreneur. My mom was a school teacher, so she had a very, like, 9-to-5 job, worked for the government. To me, that was always very boring. I was like, this is just doesn't fit my personality. I'm not going to show up and, like, I'm not the type of kid or person that was like, I don't like being told what to do. I like to create my own path. I like to create my own thing. So at 10 years old, my very first business was a babysitting business.
And at 10?
At 10. And we belonged to a country club and I had a monopoly. I think I probably charged $5 an hour. But my best friend, Courtney, she would come as my assistant. And it's funny because I look back and I'd be babysitting like babies. Like, I'd literally be babysitting 5 or 6 kids and I was 10. And, like, some of the kids were, like, 9 years old. I'm like, who's trusting a 10-year-old to watch their, like, 9-year-old child and all these, like, little babies? But I was just very mature. I was very maternal. But also I was very business minded. I was like, yeah, I love the kids, but I was also like, give me that money, honey. Like, I was doing it for money. I had goals and things I wanted to buy. And my parents were good with that, where they're like, if you want something, you have to earn it. You know, both my parents were very hardworking people. They still are to this day. Like I said, my dad's the entrepreneur. So I think I got that from him, where it was like he would always encourage me, like, if you want something, Alexis, in life, like, you can create it, you can do it, like, you can be your own boss. And so, you know, like I said, at 10, I had this babysitting business, which I did for like 4 years. And then when I got into high school and I could actually get like a real job, I started doing that. But I've always had an entrepreneurial mindset where the thought of like working for someone else just would be very difficult for me and for my personality, because I want to do my own thing. I want the creativity. I want my own schedule. I want to be paid what I want to be paid. I don't want somebody putting a cap on me. And even when you work, I think, a normal job where you work for someone else, like, you have to realize that shouldn't be a ceiling for you. You know, that should be not a means to an end, but like something that can give you the things that you need. But then there's always opportunity for other things. So I'm a very big fan of like having a side hustle or doing something like that. But yeah, I think as a kid, I was just taught to be an entrepreneur. And then when I got into college, I really wanted to go to school in San Francisco. I wanted to go to Berkeley. That was like my dream. And my dad or New York. Those were like my two places I wanted to go. Really New York, but my dad was like, no, you're not going to New York.
I wanted
like,
to go to New York
too. Yeah. Like that was like my whole heart. I was like, I need to live in New York. My cousin lived in New York, so I would visit her every year. And I'm like, this is like my soul. Like, I love a big city. I love all the people. I love the energy here. Mm-hmm. And he was basically like, you need to stay in California. I wanted to go to Berkeley, didn't get in there, but I ended up going to school at UCLA. And when I was at UCLA, I got a job in sales. And from there, like, that completely shifted my life, because I feel like that is definitely one of my gifts and talents is sales, and really more selling myself and learning how to talk to people. Like, I love people. I love talking to them. I love learning about them. That's just, I've always had that, what's the word I'm looking for? When you're curiosity, you know, like that curiosity about humans and their nature and their lives and how they ended up where they did, or how they met their spouses, or how they ended up living in a city, or their careers. Like, I've always, I find humans very interesting, genuinely interesting. And so in this sales job, I was living up in LA, and I remember I would like go to school, and I hated school. I hated college. I was like, this is the biggest waste of time ever. Because first of all, I didn't feel like I was learning anything. And then second of all, in my sales job, I was making really good money. So I would go to people's homes and I would make like $1,000 at like 10 o'clock. And then I would have to go to class after. And I'm like, what am I doing here? Like, most of these kids in this school are going to make $1,000 a week in their first job out of college. Like, I just made that in an hour. You know, like, this is not teaching me anything. It's not giving me any life skills.
What were you selling?
Knives.
Oh, you were doing the Cutco.
I was selling Cutco.
Oh.
Which is a job that I highly recommend for any 18-year-old. I will make my kids do it, because it teaches you how to, again, like, be knowledgeable about a product, right? Because when you're in life, like, I don't care if you're working for someone or you have your own company or whatever it is, like, you have to be really knowledgeable about what it is that you're selling or you're marketing. It taught me how to talk to people. It taught me how to handle rejection. It taught me how to basically deal with the rejection to make it not a rejection. So a lot of times it's like, I already knew what people were going to say and I would handle it before, then there was nothing they could say. So when I was selling Cutco, it was like, you know, all these women who were just stay-at-home wives or business people or whatever. And again, I was in LA, so I was in a very affluent area. I'm like, every single home here can afford it. You know, like, it's my job to basically show these people why this is the best product. And everyone bought. Like, I sold hundreds of $1,000s worth of knives when I was in college. So
that's incredible.
It was, like quite an experience. And I would end up in like celebrities' homes and they'd be like inviting me over for dinner the next night. They're like, we love you, Alexis. Come over for dinner tomorrow night. And I like became friends with a lot of these people.
What I think is cool too is, selling a product like that where you have to go door to door and you're, it's so different. Like, I worked retail when I was 15 to like 18, but it's different because even in, I sold like fashion and jewelry, and people are coming there because they already want something.
Right.
So it's a little different when you're taking something to somebody who is like, they don't need this product. They probably already have knives in their house. That is such a beautiful skill set to obtain, because when people are coming you to buy, it's a little bit easier to sell someone on a pair of jeans when they were already coming in to buy something in the first place versus you going to them being like, hey, I know you have this whole knife set, but this is why you need this one.
So 100%. That's really cool. It was an amazing experience. And like I said, it's something that I think every person going into adulthood, you know, every like 18, 19, 20 year old should do, even if it's for a month, just because you learn so much about people, you learn about selling, you learn about rejection. I mean, just all these like bigger life things that you're going to deal with as an adult, you know, which you don't understand when you're 18 years old. It's like, you've never dealt with rejection before. You've never had to go sell a product to somebody who doesn't want the product.
And that's the thing. Like, you don't deal with rejection at a department store because you're just like, oh, okay, they didn't want it. Like,
yeah. You don't have skin in the game. You know, for me, I was working 100% on commission. So I had a lot of skin in the game. So I was like, oh, these people are going to get these knives. And not only because of the compensation.
You're buying these knives and you don't know about it.
But it was just because I fully believed in it. So for me, I've only sold and done things that I 1000%. I'm like, I believe in this so much. And it's funny because that was 20, 25 years ago, but I will still see, like, of course I went to all of my family, all my like friends' parents, right? Who I still, they're like, we still have our Cutco knives, Alexis. Like, I'm like, I know, 25 years later, you still have the same knives. So it's like, I felt good about it. I really had conviction over what I was doing.
Right.
But to me, like, that was just a small part of it. I really enjoyed the people I met. I mean, like I said, I met like probably over 2,000-3,000 people while working that job. And it opened up so much opportunity and doors where I was like traveling with some of these people and job opportunities after college, or like just it opened up a lot of doors and opportunity for me that wouldn't have happened. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it was just really beautiful to get to know these people. And I learned, you know, first and foremost in that job, more than even just selling the product, that like people are lonely, you know, like they want to be talked to. They want to have someone that's interested. And I think a lot of the times, like people ended up just buying the knives because they really liked me, you know, mm-hmm. and they were like, okay, if I use these knives, great. If I don't, I don't really care. But
it's good to hang out.
I believe in this college student, and like I want her to hit her goals and whatever it is she's doing, and we're going to like do it, you know. But then they ended up getting the knives in return. So that was a really good experience. And that really catapulted me into starting my business as a chef. So fast forward to when I graduated college, I had this degree. It was in international studies, and I've always loved traveling. I wanted to like travel the world and do things, but I was kind of like, you know, my gift is sales. Like, I know that. Like, I have a sales gift. So out of college, I got recruited by a few different pharmaceutical companies, and that's when I met my kid's father, Joe, and he was very into holistic health. He was a hippie. He was a raw foodist. So he like started teaching me all these things about health and nutrition. And when I was in college, I had lived in Italy. Mm-hmm. And when I lived in Italy, that was like the first time like the food thing kind of clicked for me, where I was like, this is I lived in Rome and I would go grocery shopping and I would buy the food, and within 2 days it would be moldy and get bad. I'm like, this is like, I mean, the food's amazing. Obviously, this is the best food I've ever had in my life. But why in America, when I buy tomatoes or apples or meat or cheese or what, like it stays good with no mold for like months. And so like that kind of like put the little curiosity button in me about health and nutrition. And again, back then that was like mid 2000s, you know, so like genetically modified foods were like just kind of being talked about. Organic foods were just kind of like coming to the surface, where people were starting to emphasize buying organic, gluten-free, glyphosate-free. And so when I graduated, I was still working for Cutco. I decided to stay with them for another year because I wanted to like hit the top sales quota in the company, which I ended up doing. And I wanted to travel. They were going to give me like a $5,000 travel bonus, and I wanted to go to Japan. So I was like, okay, I'm going to just stay doing this, and kind of looked into the other sales jobs. And then I got really into nutrition, and I was like, I think I want to be a chef, you know, even though I didn't know how to cook. Like growing up, my parents didn't really cook.
Yeah.
My mom worked full time. My dad worked full time. You know, we had a housekeeper that kind of made some meals, but I wasn't really fully exposed to cooking in my home. But my best friend's mom. They were like hippies from Berkeley, and she always cooked home cooked meals. So like when I was at her house, I kind of learned to cook. Mm-hmm. My papa was also very into cooking and nutrition and always telling me, you know, like what was in foods, what was not in food. So again, that like curiosity was always there. And then when I had met Joe, he really opened my eyes to holistic health and nutrition. And I just was kind of like, I feel like I want to start cooking for people. Mm-hmm. And one of my very good family friends, so I did, I started this like little raw vegan business out of my home where I started cooking stuff for myself. And I was selling it to some friends and neighbors. And one of my good family friends, she got cancer, and she was like, I think she was in her mid 30s. She had 3 kids under the age of 7. And she basically was like one of the healthiest people I knew. And she had asked me, she said, Alexis, I know you have this little like raw vegan business. I have stage 3 breast cancer, and I'm going to go down to Mexico. I'm going to do like a holistic treatment down there. I'm not going to do chemo or radiation, but when I come back, I want you to make all my meals for me. I want you to juice for me. I want you to make all my food for me. Cause you know, at that point it was like, we know that food is medicine, right? And mm-hmm. what can make you sick can also heal you. And I was like very aware of that. I was like, this is like my passion. I want to teach everybody about holistic health and nutrition and how to eat right. And so when she came back, I started cooking for her. And within like 4 months, she was in like full
remission
mm-hmm. from that. And I had like 8 women calling me with breast cancer after that. And they're like, please come cook for us. So I started my career as a cancer chef. So I went to a few different schools, got trained to learn about nutrition and health and cancer. And from there, I basically started my business. And I pretty much was solely working for people with cancer for the first few years. And then when I got pregnant and I had my son, I really got into like moms and pregnancy and families, because I'm like, okay, like what does everyone need? It's prevention. You know, I'm getting a lot of these clients who already now have gotten sick. Mm-hmm. How do I teach people how to not get sick? So then I started teaching cooking classes, and that's kind of how my career as a chef blossomed.
Wow. Yeah. What a great story. I know. I love it.
You storytell really well.
Thank you.
Yeah. You have a beautiful way of like just telling stories, which I love that.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's been quite a journey. But to my point, you know, my family was not happy when this was like my career path. They're like, what? You're going to sell raw vegan food? Because I had a college degree. Oh, you know, yeah. They're like, you didn't go to Cordon Bleu. Like, what are you going to go work in a restaurant? I was like, I knew I would never work in a restaurant.
Yeah.
So pretty much my whole career has always been private chefing and having my own business. And I created a cleanse business and all these things because I looked at chefs. And I remember I went and applied at a few different restaurants. So I was like, this is not me. Like, I'm not going to be stuck in a gross kitchen with like bad ingredients, with gross seed oils. Like, I knew about all this stuff 18 years ago, you know? So even before I got pregnant with my son, I was like eating super clean, taking ashwagandha, taking Camu Camu, all these supplements, like working with a naturopathic doctor. And it's interesting because when I got pregnant, I was 25 and it was not planned. I was like very much still partying and having fun and living my best like life. But I got pregnant, and immediately when I got pregnant, I remember I went into an OB to do an ultrasound. And I mean, I didn't know anything mm-hmm. about pregnancy at that point. You know, I was 25 years old. Like, I knew a lot about food and nutrition and holistic health and like a little bit about like the medical system, but not a ton. And I told the OB, I was like, you know, I don't feel comfortable having my child in a hospital. Like, I'm looking into alternative options. And he scolded me. And this was like a family friend of ours, basically told me if I didn't have my baby in the hospital, I was extremely irresponsible. My child would die possibly. Like, he told me a story about his daughter and how if she wasn't at the hospital, her umbilical cord was wrapped around her neck. And he was basically like, you're dumb if you don't have this baby in a hospital. And again, it's like my intuition was like, oh, I'm not having this baby.
You're like, oh, thanks for telling me. I know. I'm definitely not.
I was like, you just confirmed what I already felt. But again, it's like so many times people want to project their fears. And for me, it's like I've always been able to decipher that as projection. I didn't know that that's what it was. But I was like, oh, I don't need this. Like, this is not the truth. This is just their own fears being projected onto me. And I knew. I was like, no. And so I ended up. Again, I had all my friends, none of them are married, none of them had children. Like they weren't on the holistic path that I was. So I remember one of my good family friends, she had had three of her babies at home. So I called her immediately. I'm like, how did you do that?
Tell me more.
Yeah, tell me what happened. She's like, oh, you need a midwife. I was like, a midwife? Like what's an old school midwife? You know, like I've heard that term, but I have no idea. She's like, yeah, the midwife. And then she started educating me about what a midwife is. And thank God, this was the year that the business of being born had come out. So I remember with Ricky Lake. So I watched that movie and I was like, because my family was freaking out. You know, again, my family's always been like against traditional. All the things. Yeah. I've done. They're like, you're not going to have a home birth, Alexis. You're going to kill your baby if you have a home birth. Yeah. Like, did you hear what the OB said? You know? And that documentary had come out, and I remember I made my grandparents watch it. I made my mom and dad watch it. I made, like, everyone in my family watch that, and they were like, oh, okay. Like, we understand, and we're going to respect you going down this route of having a home birth. And I did. And it was, you know, it was really intense, but it was, like, one of the most amazing experiences in my life because for the first time, I got to tap into my, like, actual strength as a human and as a woman and, like, if you can, you know, have a baby naturally, I don't think that there's anything that you can't do in this world. You know, I felt like I was like, I could go run 10 marathons and I'd be fine. Like nothing compares to like having a baby naturally. And my son was born in water and it was just this beautiful experience. Mm-hmm. But like, again, when you have the whole world coming at you, telling you no and questioning you, it's like you just have to know like how your you intuition. Navigate that?
Or how did you get them on board with that?
I think a lot of it had to do with me showing them the documentary. And also, I think as a person, I've always just
been strong-willed.
Yeah, I'm very strong-willed. I don't care what people think. I never have. And that was like, that's a blessing and a curse, right? Mm-hmm. Because it's a blessing for me in the sense that like, it really helps me to like accomplish my dreams and my goals and the things that I know are best for me as a person.
Yeah.
But it's hard because for other people, it's like it creates a lot of tension. You know, mm-hmm. It can create a lot of tension. It can create a lot of division. It can create a sense, I think, for people in my life and my family or my friends where it's like, oh, Alexis thinks she knows best. But I'm like, I do know what's best for me, you know?
But that's also what I think when you're in your full authenticity, that's what it does. It is going to rub people the wrong way who don't know how to be in their authenticity.
Totally.
So it feels uncomfortable for them.
Well, it's like, we're all mirrors, right? So it's like when you're a mirror for that where you're like, I don't care what you say or what your fears are, your projections. It's just like it's triggering other people because they're like, oh, shoot. Like I can't – I don't know. It's almost like – this internal battle I think that sometimes people have and I don't even think they're aware of it, but it's very easy to pass judgment. It's very easy to project, you know, so your easy. Own things. And when you have someone that's like not accepting the projection and they're just like,
I don't care.
I'm just going to do what I'm going to do. And not to like have like an F you to you, but also it's just kind of like, this is just what I know is right for me, you know? And I even, as an adult now and having gone through all the experiences I have, I'm like, a lot of people in my family and a lot of my very close friends, like they don't do things the way that I do them, you know, with parenting or birthing or whatever it is during COVID. Like we had very different stances on things, but I've never tried to show up in a way where I'm like judging them or I'm trying to like put my point of view on them. I'm like, this is just how I live my life.
Yeah.
And if you have questions, like I'm happy to answer them. And if you don't, I'm not going to push my beliefs or my way of life on you. That's like something that you've got to come into your own, you know, fruition. Yeah. So.
It's very big of you to say that because I feel like they unconsciously push their beliefs onto you.
Mm-hmm. They try.
They try. Yeah. Like not always, but they're showing up to the room like, no, Alexis, like you need to do it this way. You know what I mean? And like, or their fears are being projections, but I could feel like you are pushing these beliefs onto me.
Yeah.
And it seems like you have like
off, like it bounces off you. Yeah. Like it's a gooey wall. It's like, heard you, bye. Like I still choose mine.
Yeah.
But not everyone shows up that way.
I know. And it's hard. And it makes me sad sometimes because I like will see family or friends or whoever, clients, where I'm like, I just see them like being so sucked into like the fear mongering.
The programming.
Or, you know, the programming, all these things. And it is hard to like, you know, beat your own drum. It's always the harder path, right?
And I think the key that you're speaking to too is like, it's not having a home birth is the way and having a hospital birth is the wrong way.
No.
Or of anything. It really comes down to like, so many women are not given the choice to listen to their own intuition because so many people are putting their fears and their opinions on them.
Right.
And I think what makes me kind of sad is like all the women I know that have had home births, like obviously they're truly listening to their intuition.
Right.
And they're like, your body knows what to do. And there could even be a happy medium, like you just had a baby.
Yeah.
And it was at a hospital because it had to be, but it was a water birth. Like you still had the perfect environment you could have for the situation.
Exactly.
And I think like women aren't given that option anymore to like, it's hard for women to hear that voice and to listen and to feel safe to listen to that voice and to trust it.
Yeah.
And I think it's a little further than that because I think some women actively choose to go get pregnant and do it at the hospital because they're like, I can't do that.
Yeah, also true.
Or like, get an epidural. I think there's like what we're talking to is like getting to that divine inner knowing and like you choosing for you and having education and the conversation to do that. Because like I know some women that have definitely explored home birth and they're like, I'm not strong enough for that. And they can which accept that within themselves and it's valid. I'm like praying that I can't do a home birth. But you know what I mean? I think it just comes down to like you listening to you and trying to find your best to like take out the noise.
Yeah.
At the end of the day. It's like don't care what other people think, but what do you want?
Yeah.
And you do that so well.
And I think it's also too like I have no judgment. I'm like, if you want to go.
Yeah, of course.
Do you know, have a hospital birth and get all the things like that's your choice. Right. Yeah. And that's the wonderful thing about being a human is like we have autonomy and we have something called free will. Right. Mm-hmm. And like we each have our own free will. And I don't judge anyone who's not doing it my way. It's just for me, I know what my way is. And I'm like very grounded and rooted in that where no one can like
rock you from it.
Yeah. And even, you know, this last baby that I had. So I was 25 when I had my first kid. I was 41 when I just had my last child. And my blood platelets got really low. I was planning on having a home birth the whole time. And my midwife was basically like, you cannot have a home birth because your risk of bleeding to death is like very, very high. Mm-hmm. And so I ended up working with an OB. I ended up having basically my home birth in a hospital, which worked out beautifully. But it's interesting because the last few weeks of my pregnancy and going to the OB and going to the doctor, there was a lot of pressure from them for me to get induced, for me to get the epidural, for me to like have a lot of them wanted me to have a C-section, but there was just all this pressure. And I'm like, I'm so grateful to God that I am like so grounded in my own truth because I knew in my heart of hearts, I'm like, I'm not going to get induced. Like I don't need it. All my kids, and especially because I was late, all my children have come at 42 weeks. But because I was high risk, they were like really trying at 40, 41 weeks to induce me because they were like, your baby's healthy right now. And you're irresponsible for not having this baby right now because
which is insane to even say. Like, even the fact that we're programmed like, oh, babies take 9 months. No, some babies take 10 months.
And some babies take 8 months. Exactly.
It's like
the baby comes when the baby wants to come. That's one thing I know. I'm like, the baby's not going to not come. I don't know any person who's been pregnant and like they just stayed pregnant forever. Like the baby is going to come out of you. it's coming out whether you want it to. And for me, I was like not ready. I'm like, I'm not ready to have this baby right now. You stay in there. You need to cook a little bit longer. Each time, each pregnancy, I was like not ready at 40 weeks to give birth. I was like, I need more time. Like I need that extra 2 weeks. And it's so interesting because all three of my children, literally all of them came at like 42 weeks, like almost to the T on the day.
Wow.
But it was like, cause finally I surrendered. I'm like, okay, I'm ready. Like I need that extra 2 weeks. But again, just having that intuition where just like you were saying, I was thinking, gosh, like how many women go into a hospital or go into whatever situation, a workout class, or they're trying to lose weight or anything, and they're told something. And then whatever that is that they're told, that becomes their reality and their truth. Mm-hmm. And it's always fear-based. You know, it's like, oh, you can't do this because X, Y, or Z could happen. Mm-hmm. Or you can't do that because X, Y, or Z will happen. And it's like they don't have the belief, I guess, in themselves and then their own intuition. And it just, it made me sad because I was thinking, gosh, there's so many women probably at this hospital who like didn't need to get induced. And then they end up having bad experiences, you know, where they're like,
well, you're not meant to have a baby lying on your back. I mean, that just makes no. That's one thing I could say is like, that makes no sense. Like, we are meant to have gravity, even if it's at a hospital, it doesn't matter.
Yeah, no.
But it's like, you're like, there's no one in any third world country who's lying down having a baby, like out of a hospital.
Yeah.
You know, you're in the hut, you're in the ground, you're in the earth, you're wherever, you're on your feet. So it's like, I just think there's so many things that we've been told and it's hard for people to untell them to themselves.
Well, again, it's a lot of programming. Yeah. You know, in this world, it's like there's a lot of programming with everything.
Yeah.
So
we're all deprogramming currently.
Yeah, exactly. So I think once you like start to, again, tap into like who you are as a human, what your intuition is, what you stand for, what you know in your heart is true. Mm-hmm. And what I know in my heart is truth is not going to be the same for you or for the next person, right? We all have our own truths. Mm-hmm. But being able to, like, stand firm in your truth and what you know is right in your heart, like, to me, I've always been, like, there was always a reward from that. Which everything, what was the reward? It's, like, everything worked out how it was supposed to.
Yeah.
And it was a beautiful experience.
I always encourage people too to like listen when things go wrong, when you perceive things to go wrong and you look at it, you usually deferred from your intuition. Like you usually made a decision, even if it's, oh, I'm having a home birth, even when you know something's not right. It could be the opposite. It could be anything. Or it could be like, I knew I didn't want to go to that place, but like I had already said yes. So I just went anyways. And then it didn't end up well. I mean, again, I should have just listened to my intuition and been okay disappointing the other person. But I think as women too, like your gift of being able to just stand in that truth is so beautiful. Cause so I think like as a recovering people pleaser, like that's been hard for me to be like, well, I know what my truth says, but like, oh, what if they don't receive it? Or what if, you know, that has been a journey to come into for myself. Of just like, it's okay to not be liked. It's okay to disappoint people.
And it's okay to say no.
Yeah.
I think that that's really it where you're just like, no.
Yeah.
No and matter what it is, you know, it's just, it's no.
And what I love about you is like, you're able to say no on everything. Like for me, there's things I can definitely say, like I've always been a no to that, but there's definitely situations where I'm like, oh, maybe, but it's a no, but I don't want to say it's a no. I'm scared to stand in that truth. That's a really big gift.
Yeah.
To stand in that so intensely.
I mean, again, I don't know why or how, you know, sometimes we like look in life or like, how did I end up this way? You know? And I think it's a culmination of things in my life from like my parents, my childhood, but also I think it is really a gift from God where it's like, he gives us certain gifts. I believe every person has a gift. And for my gift, it's always been being like very firm and strong in my beliefs in not only him, like what he has planned, but also in myself. You know, I really do. At the end of the day, it's like, yes, I've made a million mistakes in my life and I will continue to make a million more, but I'm okay with that because at least it was my choice. You know, I think there's no bigger regret than doing something for someone else to try and make them happy or try and please them.
It always blows up.
It does.
Never feels good.
It never feels good.
It turns into resentment. It blows up in some way. Later down the line, you're like, I've been holding this in for so long. I gave you all my life.
Yeah.
And you still don't see me or love me, you know? Right. And you're like, oh, well, shit. I should have just chose me the entire time.
Well, happiness, really, and joy, what does that come from? It does not come from circumstances. It doesn't come from someone else. It comes from right here. Mm-hmm. You know, if you have joy and happiness inside of your heart and you're at peace with who you are, it's no one can take that from you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I think that my life, like, I really feel grateful that I've always been able to trust that and know that, where it's like joy and happiness, it's here. And it's I could be in the worst situation possible and the hardest, but I can still choose joy. I can still choose happiness. And that is my choice. And no one can take it or give it to me. And it's like, that's the most empowering thing. Because at the end of the day, it's like, again, doesn't matter what your circumstances are, who, like, who's in your group of friends or your family or what they say or think about you. It's like, you know, in your heart who you are. And God knows, like, for me, I'm like, God knows who I am. And that's all that really matters, you know. And of course, I'm going to make mistakes. And of course, I'm going to mess up and upset people. But my intentions are good. You know, my intentions are pure. And a lot of times it's just, again, people projecting, putting things on you or trying to tell you, you should do this, you should do that. It's like, no, like, you do what you know is best for you, you know? Mm-hmm. And even with my kids, it's like, you want to encourage them when you become a parent, but you don't want to be telling them, oh, you need to do this or you need to do that. Or yeah. It's like, you should try this, you know, and see how that feels and see if that's in alignment. But like not forcing them or making them to do things. And again, letting them make mistakes, you know, that's just a part of human nature in life, is that you're going to make a lot of mistakes. And what's the most important thing when you make a mistake is like, what did you learn?
You always learn something.
Yeah. You always learn something.
Like, and we need the mistakes.
Yes, we do that. That's we need what shapes them. Us. You know? That's what gives us wisdom, right? What gives wisdom is like making mistakes and learning from them.
Yeah. You know? Oh, I love this so much. Yeah. I'm so glad that you came onto the show.
Me too.
Okay. So where in your life do you feel called to be more fully expressed?
I feel called to be more fully expressed, I think, in my parenting. Mm-hmm. And I have teenage boys who are 13 and 15. And then I have now a 2-month-old baby boy. And I think when I was raising my first two children, I was, first of all, very young. And I didn't know what I was doing. And I didn't have a lot of resources. And I was just starting out my business. And I was having issues with, you know, the boy's father. And that was really stressful. And then my son, who's my oldest, Elijah, he started regressing. And I had him in all kinds of therapy. And so it was just a very stressful time. And this is before I knew he had autism. So it was just like, I just remember feeling the weight of the world every day. And just feeling like I was suffocating. And now, having come out of that, you know, 15 years later, I feel like with this baby, I feel a lot more present. I feel a lot more confident. I feel like, you know, when things are coming, it's like I feel like I can navigate it better and not get so stressed out. When you're a first-time parent, and any parent will attest to this, like everything is a big deal, right? Mm-hmm. Your baby has a sneeze, it's a big deal. Like they put something from the ground in their mouth, it's a big deal. Like their diapers, their feeding. Like I just remember, like, again, just there was so much stress and pressure where it didn't allow me to be fully present. Just every day I was like praying, like, help me God, get me through this. Like I feel like I'm gonna die, you know? And that was like for years. So I don't really remember that part of my kid's childhood. Like I have very little recollection of that. So I'm feeling like now I will be more present, and I am more present, not only for my teenage kids, right? Because they're at a place where they're self-sufficient and they can take care of themselves. And I'm trying to be very intentional about my time I spend with them and taking them out on a date night or doing something special with them. But now with this baby, I feel like I'm able to just really enjoy motherhood and enjoy like how he's growing and every day with him and just really being present. And I think a lot of that, too, with my business is I think a lot of things have happened in my life in the last 18 years where I always knew I wanted to have a global brand and a global product where I could share my services, which my, you know, what's my passion? My passion is health and wellness, and not just I've always served my like community at large that I've lived in. So Southern California is where I live, but I've traveled all over the world to cook for clients. But I've always felt like I want to share my gifts and my products and like my food with everyone in this world. Like I want everyone in America and outside America to be able to like eat my food, you know, because I feel like I do believe it's one of the healthiest foods possible. So I feel like everything is kind of culminated where now I'm able to really hone in and create a brand and a product where I'll be able to share that and it just feels like the time is now to do that. And I feel very present and I feel very ready and excited for what's to come in the future. So.
So good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Can't wait to see that product.
Yeah.
I love that this is coming up because literally we record another episode about how like when you're so stressed, like you literally don't remember anything.
You know,
it's you don't. True. And like people don't realize that when you're so dysregulated. I mean, yes, like sometimes like you're in survival or you're just trying to figure it out. But it really does take away from the memories.
It does.
And it's you get sad. To create memories.
I know. And it just, I don't know. I mean, again, you can't go back and change time. But if I had any bit of advice, especially for women having little babies under the age of 5, it's like one thing I did appreciate was that I was mostly with my children all the time. You know, they were in daycare a little bit. I had nannies come in and help me for like a few hours, a few times a week. But like I raised my children. And, you know, I did not have a lot of finances. Like, I remember just every month, like, barely making it. But I just was there for every moment of those kids' lives. So when they were walking and talking and just any new memories and experiences, I was able to, like, I was the one that was there to experience those things. And I think that that's so important because you'll never get that time back. And even though I was stressed and I, like I said, I felt like I had the weight of the world, like, I was there with my children. There wasn't someone else there. You know, they weren't in a daycare all day. They were with me. And I would just cook from my house and the kids would be there and it was chaos. And, you know, I'd screaming babies and, you know, like dirty diapers that I was like dealing with. But I was just like, this is just how it is, you know?
Yeah.
And we're gonna have to go with that. And, you know, what's interesting is even with my business, I feel like because a lot of my clients are women between the ages of, let's just say, 30 and 60, it's like they sometimes I'd be like, oh God, if they come over, my house is a mess. I've shit everywhere. And, you know, then my kids, like, they're running around naked or whatever, and they're out of control. But, like, people actually appreciated that because it was real, you know. And when they would come and they were my clients and they would give me business, it was like, I think they felt good that they were supporting a single mom, helping me, you know, feed my children or whatever it was. But, like, I don't know. I guess I've also never, like, hidden things. I'm not, like, embarrassed. I'm just like, yeah, my house is a mess. There's crap everywhere. Yeah. And, you know, my baby just pooped in a toilet right here. And it was just very genuine. So.
Very real.
Yeah, very real.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And people want to feel real. You know?
Yeah,
like,
I know.
A part of being authentic, we talk so much. It's, like, not so much of just, like, showing up and expressing your authentic self. But that's something that people feel at the end of the day.
It is. It's a real thing. And I think a lot of people will wear masks to, again, please others. And for me, it's like,
or present a certain way, or want to be seen a certain way.
Yeah, you're kind of like a chameleon. You fit in. For me, I'm just like how I am with my kids and my family and my friends is like, it's very the same. I'm never like showing up in a, I'm just like, I am me.
That's true. I could attest to
that. And it's abrasive for some people where they're just like, it's too much. They don't like it. I know I'm not everyone's cup of tea. But for the people that know me and have known me for a long time, it's like they know I'm very loyal. Mm-hmm. I will always have your back. I'm honest. I have integrity. Like the things that matter in long-term friendships or in like building relationships with people, like those are all very real. You know, with my clients, it's the same thing. Like I treat my clients like they're my family, you know, where I really pour all my love and my heart into them. And even with my cooking, that's the same thing about my cooking. I always say, I am not the best chef. Like, I'll go to a Michelin star restaurant or a nice restaurant, and I'm like, gosh, like, I actually I suck, you know? Like, I'm not a – but it's also, like, what is special about my food is that it's, like, it's made with love. It tastes like your grandma made it. You know, it's, like, very home cooking, but it's healthy.
Yeah.
And that's always been my lane is that, you know, it's, like, it's not fancy food. It's just very much like your grandma made it, and it's made with love and good quality ingredients, and it's clean, you know? So
– love.
Yeah, that's what matters most.
Exactly. Always got to sprinkle that love in there.
Yeah.
People can feel that.
Yes.
Every time.
Yeah.
Every time.
Yeah,
definitely. Non-negotiable.
That's the most important ingredient. I'm like, it's just the love that you put into it.
The worst is when you go to a restaurant and you can tell people are like sad or hectic. Sometimes I have to like re-energize my food when I'm like, this person's totally very sad that just put my salad together.
I know.
Like, I need to combat that energy.
Yeah. It's true.
Well, thank you so much. This was so fun.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you for having me.
Great first podcast.
I know.
Thank you. Yeah, you do incredible.
Yeah, do more.
Yeah.
Thank you, girls. We'll have to do a part two.
Yeah.
I have like other good stories.
You have some very good stories
I would like to share with you, but we can save those for another day.
Yeah.
I feel like I'm also a very – it's interesting because when I did my human design, I'm a manifesting generator, and I think a lot of people are also, but – there's so many things in my life where I'm like, I can't believe I like that happened. You know, like I thought about it and then like, you know, then I'm in this person's home and I'm doing it. And it's like how, like where, I don't know. But
yeah.
It's to your energy of going after what you want.
Yeah, exactly.
And trusting your intuition.
Yeah. And I think for all people listening, it's like, I want to encourage you that whatever it is you want in this life, like it's all attainable. You know, the most important thing is that you have the belief that you can and you envision it and that you go after it. You know, you have to have the action too. Like you can't just manifestation. People think, oh, I'm like thinking it. It's like, no, manifestation. When you manifest something, it's like you have to take action to get there. And sometimes it's with a lot of no's and, like, you know, again, a lot of people telling you, you can't do this, you shouldn't do this, this is not right. But when you have that North Star of what you're being called to do, it's amazing what will happen. And it's amazing the people that you cultivate and the experiences you cultivate in doing that. And just, yeah, really believing in yourself that you can do anything you want in this life. It's all possible.
I love it. I think of the Minions. Be do, be do.
Exactly.
Literally. Be do, be do, be do.
That's exactly what it is. Keep being, keep doing, keep being, keep doing.
Or think, be do, think, be do.
That's all it is.
Yeah. Well, until next time, till part two.
Yes. Yeah. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
We hope you loved today's episode and that it sparked something in you on your journey to becoming more fully expressed.
Don't forget to check the show notes for all the details and resources from today's conversation. If you enjoyed this episode, please leave us a review.
We'd love to hear your honest thoughts and takeaways as it really helps us to create content that better serves you.
This week, we invite you to show up even more as you. More honest, more real, more expressive in your life and business. And we'll see you on the next one.